Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes, okay. We can hear you.
It is 9 o'clock and we have a pretty long list of things to kind of get through this morning. So I want to go ahead and get started. Cindy, how is it best for you to do the attendance? Do you want to just take it from the screen or do you want me to do introductions? How do you want to do that?
Maybe at least introduce the people that just have phone numbers. They could introduce themselves.
Let me see if I can unmute you myself. Whoops. Are you there, Cindy? Oh, hold on. Okay, maybe it was me. Are you there, Cindy?
Tanya, this is Brian. She had said that maybe you could just, if there's anybody that's on the phone, they okay. can identify themselves because that's, you know, more difficult okay. to know.
I apologize. My volume was all the way down and I didn't realize that. So, okay. So I have a caller from 772-2918. Could you please identify yourself?
Michelle Young.
Hi, Michelle.
Good morning, Tanya.
And I don't see anybody else that has a phone number, but I'll look again here in a few minutes. So anyway, good morning, everyone. Welcome. Thanks for joining us. We have some changes for CLS on the horizon here that are going to take effect on October 1st. And I wanted to take an opportunity to share with you guys what the changes are and what to expect coming up. MDHHS is making community living support code changes in regards to H0043, which is the per diem code, which is expiring on 9/30/2020. So after the end of this month, the H0043 will become H2015. Again, H0043 will become H2015 for one-on-one services. If it's not one-on-one, it will be the H2015. What we used to call TT modifier will now have a new definition of modifiers based on the number of consumers served. So for example, H2015 would be for one-on-one CLS. And these notes are with the meeting invite too, just so you guys know. H2015 for two consumers served would be the UN modifier. For three patients served would be the UP modifier. For four would be the UQ modifier. For five would be the UR modifier, and for six would be the US modifier. Like I said, it's broken down in the email for the meeting invite also. Any authorization for H2015 solely that didn't have a TT modifier on it, there's no change needed in SIGMO. Current authorizations with the H2015 TT modifier will be early terminated by provider network using the end date of 9/30/2020. If an authorization includes both the H2015 and the H2015 TT modifier, the H2015 TT will be early terminated with a 9/30/20 end date. Any remaining units will be added to the H2015 code. So your number of units shouldn't fluctuate, just the code used is going to change. The new authorizations beginning 10/1/20 will require providers to add the appropriate modifier to their claims based on the shared staffing situation. So this is where it gets a little bit sticky for providers to monitor this. So you as a provider will have to monitor when there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 consumers served and bill the appropriate modifier for that time of service that's provided. The new authorizations beginning October 1st will require both the providers to add the appropriate modifier to their claims based on the shared staffing situation, which is what I just explained. There will be monitoring process that occurs for validation of the appropriate billing of these modifiers. Use of the new modifiers, MDHHS will retire the use of the TT modifier for H-2015, as I said, effective 9/30/2020. And MDHHS has listed a little bit different information than what we've kind of had in the past as far as appropriate billing of the breakdown of CLS for numbers of consumers served. So the modifiers listed for the breakdown with the different UN, UP, UQ, UR, US differentiation will be based on a preponderance of service. That's kind of a new word for provider networks. I want you to hear this. Preponderance of service in general means the use of the new multiple consumers modifiers will follow the concept of preponderance of service. This means that the reported modifier does not need to change during the course of the day as the natural interactions between consumers and staff vary throughout the day. Instead, the modifier will be based upon the number of consumers in the shared living arrangement. For example, if three people live together, their residential services would be reported as the UP modifier, i.e. three consumers served. If one of the three consumers goes outside to walk around the apartment building before dinner, the reported modifier would not be changed to UN, which means two consumers served. The preponderance of services that were provided to the three roommates, two on the shift, was for three consumers simultaneously and therefore should be reported with the UP modifier, which is three consumers for the entire shift. So I just want to stop there for a second. Does that make sense to everybody? I do have an exceptions to that preponderance that I'm going to go into next, but I just want to open it up and make sure there's not any questions in regards to the preponderance of service. Anybody? Okay. So the exceptions to the preponderance of service is that other services and planned leaves of absences, which are identified in the member's IPOS, would be an exception to the preponderance of service concept. For example, if three people live together, their residential services would usually be reported with the UP modifier for three consumers served. But if one of the consumers attends a skill building program from 9 to 3, on Mondays, or even Monday through Friday, per their IPOS, it would be appropriate to change the modifier reported for the two consumers who remain in the home to UN for two consumers served from the 9 to 3 on Monday through Fridays. The same approach would be used for unplanned inpatient stays. Another example would be when the three roommates require one-to-one staff and the other two roommates receive shared staffing as documented in their IPOS. Although three people live together, the residential services for one member who requires one-to-one staffing would be reported with no modifier for that individual served, and the services for the other two roommates would be reported with the UN modifier for two consumers served. A final example would be when one of the three roommates goes on a leave of absence from the home. If three people live together, their residential services would usually be reported with a UP modifier for three consumers served. On the days when the roommate is on a leave from the home, it would be appropriate to change the modifier reported for the two consumers who remain in the home to UN for two consumers. The new modifier chart is attached also in the email that you received for the invite to this meeting. It breaks it down for you for the different 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 members served. In addition to that change, there's also the place of service code for this code is 12 for in-home. In general, the use of the place of service code will follow the concept of preponderance of service. This means that reported place of service code does not need to change during the course of the day as natural activities of community living supports vary throughout the day. For example, if during the course of the day, a consumer and a staff member go to the grocery store to get milk for dinner, the place of service code would continue to be reported as 12, which is in the home. Any questions about that?
Tanya, do you mind if I just jump in really quick with part of what we've discussed with our staff? Because I'm sure as a provider, part of what I'd be wondering, you guys are hearing a lot as Tanya's talking about the plan of service dictating kind of what you guys are going to be working on. And so I want to make sure that you guys are aware that when we're meeting with our staff, we are really talking with them about ensuring that if somebody has a one-to-one need of service, that we don't change our plans of service in response to this new direction. So if somebody needs 2 hours of one-to-one CLS per day, the plans of service interventions are still going to say that. So I want to make sure that, you know, this interface of shared versus one-to-one and what should be being provided, we are still directing our staff to make sure that they're helping your staff by documenting what can be done in a shared CLS arrangement, what should be done individual with the consumer. So hopefully that also helps some reassurance where you don't feel like you'd be left to kind of translate all on the back end. We still should be having clear interventions to help you figure out how you're serving the individuals you're working with.
That helps. Thanks, Renee. Any questions in regards to the breakdown of the modifier usage, the place of service code? Any questions or scenarios that you want to discuss in regards to the preponderance of service? No questions. I guess I must have done good in explaining it, huh? So if there's no further questions about that reminder, you know, I can't reiterate it enough. It starts on October 1st, and it will be up to you as a provider to build that appropriate breakdown under the code starting October 1st.
Tanya, do we have amendments that were reflective of these code changes sent out yet, or that's going to be coming? Is that right?
They were sent on Friday and Monday. I anticipate if you don't have them, you should have them today or tomorrow at the latest. But they were definitely sent on Friday and Monday. And it also gives the breakdown of the rates with those in your contract. Okay. Just a sidebar note, also a letter was sent on Friday and Monday as well. Half of them went out Friday, I think, and half went Monday or something to that effect in regards to the continuation of the direct care worker premium being extended until January 2021. So big thanks to Mid-State Health Network for making that happen for our region. It isn't something that's been, you know, initiated statewide, so we're very thankful to have that support from Mid-State Health Network at this time.
Yeah, very awesome.
I do want to take a minute to discuss, and I know change is difficult and it's inevitable, and I guess bringing it to the forefront with the change in this breakdown of CLS modifiers is that we have started a new CLS progress note that we have been piloting with Independent Community Living Services in Midland. Is there anybody from Independent Community Living on the line?
Yes, Sarah Hubble here.
I'm sorry?
Sarah Hubble.
Okay, hi, Sarah. Hi. I just wanted to kind of give a minute for Debbie to kind of go through the CLS note, and maybe if you had some things you could offer up about the note and how you found it to be beneficial, and then maybe open up for discussion from the entire crowd here in regards to some suggestions or anything that you might see we would need to do to tweak this form to make it more user-friendly under these circumstances. So I'm gonna hand it over to Debbie for a minute, and I think she's gonna share her screen and kind of go over the form with you.
Okay, good morning, everyone. I'm gonna share my screen with you. We came up with a progress note that is similar to what we had before, except for we added in ratios to go along with the new modifiers. So hopefully this will cut down on the amount of paper, because the staff can put in multiple ratios for each day. The top of the progress note is the same, as you can see. I just did a general example. The narrative will be the same as staff are doing now, As you can see, the start time is 3 o'clock to 4:30. The ratio for that time is 1:1. The staff would then put in a narrative for that time, what they did, same as they're doing now. Then from 4:30 to 6, the ratio changed, the roommate came home, and now it's 1:2. So they would continue on the same progress note, giving a narrative of what happened the rest of the time. At the bottom, there's a change, adding adult home help time. So as you know, we don't want that to be billed as CLS. We want the adult home help to be separate than CLS. And so there's a place there to put in the adult home help when that was provided. So the start and end time for the adult home help on this note was 2 to 3. And that's built for, or taken into account first, because that needs to be, adult home help needs to be used before CLS. And then up here, the CLS begins at 3 o'clock. And then they would include the miles if that's the where you're using that, if you're not using a transportation log separately. And then the staff would sign it. So as you can see, there's 4 different spots that staff can put in as ratios change. I don't anticipate that it will be more than that, but if their ratios change more than that, they would just use a separate note. So does anyone have any questions about that?
Debbie?
Yep.
This is Michelle. A question I have is, because we have some folks who adult home help, they only get, you know, a couple of minutes, and then it intertwines with CLS. It might be medication passing. So how are we to record that?
Right, that makes sense.
Because some of us are very limited on the amount of time they have. I mean, it's very, very minimal.
Right. Well, the adult home help needs to be first. So if they get, for example, 15 minutes a day average throughout the month, that first 15 minutes would be down here at the bottom.
So if it's 1 to 2 minutes, we put that there and then go up to CLS.
Right.
Okay.
And we talked about this a little bit the other day. I don't know if you wanna jump in, Angela or Renee, with what we talked about at our meeting on Monday.
Yeah, so we did talk a little bit about this because we recognize adult home help through MDHHS and our CLS units, our 2015 being a 15-minute unit, and adult home help being able to come out in 2 and 3 minute chunks makes a difficulty for providers, and it is a challenge to figure that out. But in keeping kind of with MDHHS's direction of a preponderance, some of the ideas we had is typically your home health tasks are going to be more targeted at certain parts of the day. Maybe you're helping them with medication passes for a minute, and then the other 14 minutes of the hour, you're getting them bathed and groomed and brushing their teeth, which might fall under a different category of adult home help. So we're also kind of looking at this in blocks of time, or if you're talking med pass, a med pass activity, and you're maybe getting their dinner ready. So trying to kind of block that for our purposes. One of the reasons we kind of asked if there was a rep from ICL here was because we were hoping they could, she would discuss or will discuss kind of how it's working for them, because ultimately what we might have to look at is putting just a total time for adult home help on the bottom of the note. So that's kind of up for discussion here as well, versus a start and stop time. So we were hoping you guys could help us figure out what would make the most sense for you.
I'm thinking the total, at least I'm speaking from our agency, because it's very difficult with the start-stop time, because like I said, we don't really have folks that have 15-minute units, that type of thing. They're very minor. So to try to get staff to go and do that is going to be very difficult.
I do appreciate that feedback. I think it makes sense. That's part of what we were discussing as well, as we wondered if that would be helpful just because of the breakdown of adult home help. But I think I heard, did Sarah say she was on the line from ICL and maybe could give a line or two feedback on how this has been working for you guys?
Hi there. We just break up the DHS in the full schedule for the person. So if they have services from 7 a.m. to 3 a.m., we break up their DHS for when it makes the most sense during that shift. So if most of the adult home help hours are done in the morning, we do like 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. for adult home help, and then 8 a.m. to 3 as the CLS.
That's what our agency does as well. My name is Stacy. I'm from Voice. Typically, we have several shifts, especially with a couple clients that have shared staffing. So this form would make more sense. Right now, we're doing 3, 4, 5 forms in an 8-to-3 shift, if you will, because some of it's shared time, some of it's AHH. Mm-hmm. So you're saying that all of it would go on one form.
Yeah, and so when we first started with this new form, they only had one spot for the adult home help hours. We did request for a second spot because of shared homes, and sometimes there's two times if the shift is broken up for, you know, grooming in the morning and then shopping in the afternoon or something like that.
Our shared home actually has three, so that would be something we'd have to look at. But we do morning med passes as shared, afternoon lunch is shared, and then evening med passes is shared.
But you still, each individual person, you document their adult home help on the one form for that person. So even if people are sharing a home, we have the adult home help broken up for each of those three individuals. And so if, you know, Joe, Bob, and Fred live together, the adult home help for Joe is only on Joe's CLS note.
That makes sense.
And I would like to say, as far as the Medicaid provider manual, they talk about it similar in terms of what Sarah originally was discussing, and some of you shared you're also doing. So like one of the examples they provide is, you know, if a person is receiving home help services, those hours must be considered as part of the total hours allowable. So when they're saying if a child, for example, would be determined to have a maximum of 6 hours per day of care and they receive 2 hours per day of home help, the CLS would then be a maximum of 4 hours per day. So that's kind of how they're looking at it too, is in chunks of time when they're giving examples within the actual Medicaid manual to ensure that we're not supplanting CLS with adult home help, or, you know, vice versa, that we're doing CLS CAS for adult home help. So I know as an agency, part of what we've talked about is putting these two different things on this note might also help with documentation and kind of understanding that those two services are separate. And I realize that the notes that are turned in for adult home help are largely check boxes and we have narratives. So there certainly are differences that we're asking from you guys, which is a challenge for your frontline staff. So we were additionally hoping that with the addition of the adult home help on the bottom, that it would kind of help get staff working in the homes in the mindset and in the frame of mind that these really are two distinct services being funneled down from two different agencies that are approving it. So hopefully it will help. But like I said, is, you know, we're open to discussing what you guys might need as you start using this CLS note. A big kudos to the provider network team. They've worked really hard with the UM team, my staff members, trying to determine how to solve some of these age-old barriers we've had when you guys are working with consumers and they have all of these different supports in place. So we appreciate everything you're doing, and we know this is a big change, but we do hope once we get over the initial hump that this will be helpful.
I have another quick question. I can't see the bottom of the note again for the adult home help part, but so you're just asking for the end time, start time. The narrative should not include the activities though, correct, of the adult home help?
Correct, yes.
That's, I think, going to be the toughest part for our staff, is understanding that we help them by saying, okay, the narrative for this note is community living support. Then on this checkboxes is the adult home help. we're putting it all on one form again. I'm afraid that they're going to start blending it all again together. That's a good point.
Stacy. I wonder, Debbie, if we should just put right in, if right next to that initial statement, if it was provided, please include the start and stop time, no, at the bottom, and then just add, do not include the adult home help narrative here. That will go on your adult home help doc, something there, just an initial prompt for staff that we do not need the adult home help. I don't know if you think, Stacy, that would be helpful, but right above the start and stop times, just including that we don't need those tasks in the narrative. I mean, that would be one idea I would have.
Or maybe even referring them to the form number that they are supposed to be using for adult home help, because I just don't want them to get confused and not fill out one or the other.
I wonder too if in this section here where it says, please provide a narrative on what occurred, if we say something in there, it's kind of long, so I don't know if that would be good or not, but to say just include CLS activities in this section, and then at the bottom say what you just said, that you know, refer to that form and do not include adult home help services on this form.
That makes sense.
How it,
they hit it from the top.
Yeah, how has it been going with the trial agency, I guess? Are they saying that staff are tending to include it, or?
This is Sarah. Most of our staff have actually started to understand the separate agencies and what is required since we started this. And okay, we haven't had anyone add the adult home help into the narrative. And good. Also, some of the, I mean, if you look at some of the CLS objectives, they do have items that, you know, people might think are adult home help. So, you know, we assist people with showering and things like that. Mm-hmm. But we haven't seen an issue.
Okay. That would be the only thing that I can think of.
And we are saving tons of paper.
I bet.
Yeah.
This is Brian. Let me just throw something into the conversation, because it seems to me that adult home help occurs various and multiple times throughout the day. And, you know, if we want to reflect the total time of adult home help in a particular day, you know, I wonder whether or not, you know, we would just have the number of hours of adult home help provided, you know, for the day. You know, because the complexities around start and stop time, when it happens intermittently or, you know, numerous times throughout the day, you know, if that's the case, and you all know more than me, you know, in terms of how this plays out, but I think that is the case.
Yeah, I think
versus just saying, well, it's the first hours used, because it's, you know, it's distinct, it's separate, it's not the same service, and it does happen at various points throughout a day. Sometimes for adult home help, the consumer may not be there because, say, they're attending another program and the staff are at home doing laundry or that type of thing under, you know, that adult home help. That would be an example, you know, and something like that as well. So just throw that out there for, you know, opening that up for discussion.
And I think, Debbie, you can explain why we did the start and stop times for adult home help in relation to what you're auditing too.
I think the biggest reason is that the CLS times billed have to match the CLS times on the node. So sometimes I would see start and stop times where the shift, the entire shift would be on here. But less time would be billed because adult home help was used, which makes sense, but maybe this would be clearer if the adult home help was separate, if they only put the total amount of time the adult home help was provided, and then the CLS start and stop times.
See, I agree with Brian, because you're leaving consumer choice out of this. A lot of times, you know, if you set the time 7 to 8 and they're going to bathe, but they decide they want to do it in the afternoon, or they want to shop at different times. I mean, schedules should really be left up to them. So for us, that's what we do. And so it would be difficult to put start and stop times or to define that for the shift because we allow them to make that choice. So I kind of agree with Brian on a total number of hours for the day.
This is Sarah, and we agree that everybody should have a choice when they do something as well. But as far as like if shopping, they know that they have this hour shift, let's say it's scheduled Tuesday from 3 to 4, it's a lot easier for them to see that that 3 to 4 can be moved somewhere else if needed, but we already have it identified as adult home help.
And I think what the intent of presenting this morning was is to, you know, start these types of discussions and for you guys to all review the form. And I think what we'll do is we'll send the form out via Constant Contacts to the CLS providers after this meeting and solicit your feedback. I'd like to have the feedback back no later than next Wednesday. Like I said, we're trying to implement this for a start date of 10-1. So if anybody would like to take a look at it and offer the feedback, we definitely would welcome that feedback, and we want you to have input on this form. You guys are the ones using it day in and day out, so we appreciate the feedback on it.
Just one more quick clarification. So the start and stop times at the top should be what is being billed, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yep, for sure. So we'll get that sent out to you guys via email after this meeting and solicit feedback to Debbie Bauman, and we can kind of compile that together. Or Debbie, do you want it to go to Cindy? What's your preference?
It's fine if they send it to me.
Okay. All right. We'll have it sent to Debbie then, and I'll make sure we put her email address in the email that comes out with the note as well. I did want to just reiterate that these code changes are for CLS in the community only. This does not affect CLS in licensed residential settings. I think there might be some confusion in regards to that. It is not for the CLS component of your per diem for a licensed residential setting. It is only for CLS for being provided in the community and in the consumer's individual homes. Another thing that's kind of on the forefront of our discussions here at CMH is contingency plans. And I'm going to probably have a full provider panel meeting in regards to this in the near future. But dealing with the COVID-19 and the crisis that we've been dealing with for several months now has brought to light the need for contingency plans for staffing. I think a lot of providers have had contingency plans in the works for moving consumers from a licensed residential setting, for example, to a secure place in the event of a power outage or an act of God or something of that nature. But we don't really have any good well-written, spelled-out contingency plans for staffing. And unfortunately, it has resulted in a crisis situation over the past. So what I'm asking of providers to do is to come up with a contingency plan that would outline what you would do in the event that, let me just give you the hypothetical situation that all of your staff became COVID positive. So all of your staff became COVID positive and you didn't have any other staff to provide service. What's your backup plan? So we would like for the providers to start developing that contingency plan and what it would look like to be able to assist if something like that were to happen.
Hey, let me jump in here if I could. And I think probably to, you know, get some discussion and some resource going as far as our, you know, provider network. If you have, you know, emergency preparedness that is inclusive of this type of aspect of, you know, like Tanya said, not necessarily where staff or consumers have to be relocated for various reasons, but instances where there's a challenge of staff shortage for various reasons. You know, what contingency plans, backup staff, pool of staff, temp agency approaches, all of those and more is what we want to explore and have developed. And so as a starting place, I think that if you as a provider have something of that nature, if that could be submitted to Tanya, and that can start, a review of what is out there. We are under review related to a specific example of that in terms of staff shortage amongst, a provider organization. And so, we need to shore this area up, and it's just highlighted, because of COVID-19. But it's something that we need to have absent of COVID-19. That can happen in any various number of scenarios and situations. And so I think I'm asking for all of you to review your, you can call it contingency plans, but just the same, you can call it emergency preparedness plans. Those need to, be in place and address that specific scenario of staff shortage. We know that there's high turnover within direct care staff, and we know that direct care staff availability and continuation of staff is a major challenge. It's not news to anybody, certainly on this call. Nonetheless, we have to work together in terms of what are some opportunities that we can advocate for to have solid contingency plans in place. And so if you have something, please get it to Tanya. I think we will be assembling those, and then, as Tanya said, future provider meetings to focus directly on this issue is probably the direction that we will take. Thank you.
Anybody have any comments about that? I see a question in the chat. I was told that we were putting the daily notes in the wrong place. Do daily notes go under CLS or AFC? Debbie, I'm certain it goes under CLS, correct?
Yes, they all should be going under CLS documents.
Thank you. Is there any other questions in regards to the emergency preparedness plans or contingency plans? Any other questions in regards to the code changes for CLS?
Can I ask anybody to respond if you have emergency preparedness or contingency plan that addresses staff shortage? If anybody could identify how, what you do have in that regard.
And send it to me after this meeting would be wonderful.
I'm just asking for in the moment here, just right, to have a little bit of conversation on the topic.
Mm-hmm.
This is Michelle. One of the things, the only thing that we have come up with is we have to pull staff from our various homes. And I know we've gotten with your agency when we've tried to redo shifts of 12-hour shifts or, work one staff on certain shifts. I know we did explore like other agencies to come in, like a temp agency, and it's very, very costly. I don't know, if there would be funding to help with that, but they want like $30 to $40 an hour based on all these different costs. So that's about all we've been able to do.
Okay. Thank you.
Hey, Brian, Kevin Majeski from Samaritas. Yeah. We have our contingency plan involves pulling staff from across the state and using a temporary service. Up in Traverse City, we have a home that we gave 60-day notice on, and we moved that home October 1st. Because of the last 4 months, we've only had 3 full-time staff in the home. We've been pulling staff from across the state and from the temp agency. The temp agency can't even keep up with us. The temp agency doesn't have enough people to fill the shifts or help with the shifts. So we ended up giving notice, and for that area of the state, they couldn't find a provider to take over the home. So the homes close on October 1st, and the four individuals in that home are being moved to other homes. That's how bad it is.
Right, and we did the same thing, Kevin, for one of our homes in the north up that way too. We just are in the process of closing it now because there's just the wage that people are paid up there, we can't compete with it. And like you said, there are no bodies out there to work.
Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah. Anybody else experiencing similar difficulties?
Well, in use of the temporary agency, we use temporary agency up in Traverse City, but I can't find a temporary agency for my group homes in Monroe to even get temp staff for that area. So depending on which area of the state you're in, a temp agency might not even be an option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, there is a question in the chat. As we make the transition, what is CMHCM going to do to help ensure OSTA are correct? How long and how many attempts are acceptable before we address it with management? What specifically can we provide to CM to help facilitate this? I just want you all to know that the case management staff have been notified of this change and that the OSTA are being transitioned administratively by provider network staff. So those OSTA should be automatically changed for you effective 10-1. You might have already started seeing them because they've been in transition over the past couple of weeks. So if there's something that's not correct with this, the contact would be Melissa Fox. She is changing these offs over to match the offs that were in the system already, just changing it to these new codes. So I don't think that you're going to see that there will be any issues with staff making the changes because we've done it administratively. But if you do, contact Melissa and you can feel free to contact me as well.
And I will additionally say that we already have Melissa running some reports across our six counties, and she's already been in communication with supervisory staff, program directors in the counties of the remaining auths that she's not able to transition. So we already started that process. She's monitoring it very close ahead of that deadline. We were very clear in our meeting just the other day that we had, and actually we had a supervisor representative in our meeting who's on the call that works with case managers. And so we're trying to get the reports out for you guys because we really don't want to see any gaps for you at all. So we're following that incredibly closely. What I can tell you on the back end, as we hit this transition, I would assume the month of October, Provider Network and probably UM staff, probably all hands on deck, making sure as we're getting the new notes in that everything's going well, taking feedback from our staff. So we're going to try to do what we can to keep up on anything we need to do to address barriers we're running into. The reality is, part of what we said in our meeting is we may hit barriers we haven't even thought of yet. So we're just going to have to really be kind of up on this from the start and address it as they come along as well.
Yeah, thanks, Renee. We're doing our best to make the transition as easy as possible for you guys. So. Any other questions or comments? In regards to anything at this point? No?
Let me just add that, you know, I think the issue about contingency and staffing needs is obviously, it is a statewide issue and problem. But I know that Tanya will be talking with the Mid-State Region's Provider Network Council that meets regularly to, you know, bring the issue to that level for just greater advocacy, including availability of staff through temp agencies. And, you know, I get that, you know, the high cost on that can be prohibitive. So I think there needs to be some advocacy about that. And so.
Right, yeah. For sure. All right, if there's nothing further, we can adjourn for now. And like I said, if you have any questions with the transition, please get with Melissa Fox. She put her email in the chat for you all. Thanks, Melissa, for doing that. And then we'll kind of just proceed as we go with this. And like I said, I welcome the feedback on the CLS note within 1 week so that we can get this implemented for 10-1. Okay.
I see that you're recording this. Will you send out the recordings? I logged in a little bit late, and I just would like to review the beginning of the meeting again.
Actually, sorry, I didn't record it.
Oh, shoot.
Sorry. Okay. If you have any questions, basically what I did, I really just read from what I sent in the meeting invite. So the information was really, really attached in the meeting invite. But if you have any further questions, feel free to reach out to me individually. It does say it's perfect. Recording. I don't know why it says it's recording because I didn't record. It does say that. Interesting.
Yeah.
I will check and see if it did record. I didn't push to record, so I'll check and see if it did. Okay. And if it did, I'll forward the recording out to the network with that note. So.
Okay, perfect.
All right. Thanks everybody for attending and have a great day.
You too. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.